Picture the morning of November 9, 2016. Half the world woke up stunned by an election result few saw coming, while Britain was still reeling from its Brexit vote months earlier. Suddenly, the international order that had governed global affairs for decades seemed to be unraveling in real time. Richard Haass, a diplomat who'd spent his career navigating the corridors of power across multiple administrations, recognized this wasn't just political turbulence, it was a fundamental rupture in how the world worked. His book arrived as world leaders scrambled to understand what was happening. Barack Obama reportedly read it in his final weeks in office. Even George Clooney referenced it in interviews. Why? Because Haass offered something rare, a clear explanation of how we got here, written by someone who'd been in the room where it happened. Think of world order not as some utopian dream of global harmony, but as the basic plumbing of international relations, the rules and power structures that keep things flowing. Throughout history, order has required two ingredients: legitimacy, agreement on what's acceptable, and power, the muscle to enforce it. The modern system emerged from the 1648 Treaty of Westphalia, establishing sovereign states as equals regardless of size or politics. The Concert of Europe refined this after Napoleon, creating a diplomatic forum where major powers managed crises and maintained relative peace for a century. Then everything collapsed. New nations like Germany rejected the status quo, old empires crumbled, and the world stumbled into two catastrophic wars, killing tens of millions. The lesson? Order is fragile. It requires constant maintenance, shared interests, and wisdom to update systems before they collapse. The post-World War II world would need to learn from these failures. The post-World War II order was built around an enemy, the Soviet Union. Despite ideological hatred, the superpowers created remarkable stability. Nuclear weapons made direct confrontation unthinkable. Mutually assured destruction recognized that some competitions can't be won, only managed. Think of two people holding grenades in a phone booth, neither wants to pull the pin. Deterrence required more than threats. The superpowers built elaborate arms control treaties, communication hotlines, and diplomatic channels. They established unwritten rules about where they could and couldn't push. Even the Cuban Missile Crisis ended with compromise. This wasn't friendship. It was something more valuable: predictability. Meanwhile, a parallel global order emerged that outlasted the Soviet Union. Bretton Woods created institutions, the World Bank, IMF, and eventually the WTO, promoting economic stability. The UN provided a forum for peaceful dispute resolution. The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty prevented weapons spread through a grand bargain. Nuclear states wouldn't share technology, non-nuclear states would accept inspections. Europe went furthest, binding former enemies so tightly that war became unthinkable. The European coal and steel community merged French and German heavy industry, evolving into the European Union. The quarter century after the Cold War defied expectations. Major power relations remained stable, despite typical post-collapse chaos. U.S. military primacy discouraged direct challenges, while economic interdependence created mutual vulnerability. Why bomb your best customer or biggest creditor? The U.S.-China relationship particularly defied the Thucydides trap, where rising powers threaten established ones, triggering war. Trade exploded from $20 billion in 1990 to nearly $600 billion 25 years later. China needed American markets and technology. America needed China to buy its debt and provide cheap goods. This created economic mutual assured disruption. Yet, cracks appeared. China's military buildup, intellectual property theft, and South China Sea assertiveness alarmed Washington. Beijing resented American arms sales to Taiwan and technology restrictions. Russia's relationship with the West deteriorated faster. NATO's eastward expansion struck Moscow as betrayal. When Ukraine pivoted toward Europe in 2014, Russia annexed Crimea. The post-Cold War honeymoon was over. Despite major powers avoiding direct conflict, disorder proliferated elsewhere. Yugoslavia's collapse exposed competing principles, self-determination versus state sovereignty. Rwanda's 1994 genocide, nearly 1 million Tutsi slaughtered, led to the responsibility to protect doctrine. Sovereignty isn't absolute when governments attack their own people. Syria became R2P's devastating failure. When Assad used chemical weapons in 2013, killing 1,500 civilians, America's non-response emboldened Assad, strengthened ISIS, and damaged U.S. credibility. Nuclear proliferation continued despite the NPT. Israel, India, Pakistan, and North Korea acquired weapons. The lessons proved ominous. Ukraine surrendered its arsenal and was invaded. Iraq and Libya abandoned programs and saw governments toppled. North Korea kept weapons and remained secure. Climate change and cyberspace presented entirely new challenges. Carbon emissions ignore borders, yet agreement remained elusive. Who cuts more, rich countries that cause the problem or developing nations needing cheap energy? Cyberspace proved more complex. Unlike nuclear programs requiring vast infrastructure, cyber attacks need only a laptop. Attribution is difficult, deterrence uncertain, and the internet's commercial importance makes restricting technology impossible. The Westphalian system, where domestic affairs remain sovereign, no longer fits reality. Financial regulations affect global markets. Environmental policies influence climate change. Public health measures determine pandemic spread. We need sovereign obligation, emphasizing not just state rights, but obligations to other nations and the global commons. Unlike humanitarian intervention doctrines focusing on what governments do to their citizens, sovereign obligation looks outward at how domestic policies affect others. It's realism updated for globalization. The framework maintains respect for borders while acknowledging legitimate humanitarian interventions. Self-determination should be granted rather than unilaterally asserted, with criteria including historical justification, popular support, and territorial viability. Multilateralism needs reconfiguration. Best practices approaches, like the Paris Climate Agreement, where countries make specific commitments within a global framework, should become standard. Designer multilateralism should bring together the most relevant and capable actors rather than favoring inclusion for its own sake, as the Iran nuclear negotiations demonstrated. Non-state actors must participate where appropriate. Addressing cybersecurity requires tech giants. Managing pandemics needs pharmaceutical companies. State power alone cannot address transnational challenges. America must maintain global order, not from idealism, but necessity. No other nation possesses the required network of alliances and partnerships. The EU lacks unified foreign policy. China's ambitions breed distrust. Yet leadership demands domestic strength, and America's foundation is fracturing. National debt approaching $14 trillion, 75% of GDP, creates vulnerability, with nearly half held by foreigners like China. Addressing this requires painful reforms, raising retirement ages, means-testing Social Security, restructuring Medicare and Medicaid, maintaining defense spending around 3% of GDP, and robust worker retraining programs. Political dysfunction poses the greatest obstacle. Weakened parties, polarized media, special interests, and procedural gridlock prevent compromise. Social media echo chambers erode shared civic discourse. Domestic disarray fuels global disorder. A divided America cannot lead. Allies doubt. Rivals exploit weakness. The choice isn't engagement versus isolation. Isolation is impossible. The question? Will America shape the emerging order or be shaped by it? The post-World War II order endured because leaders understood stability serves everyone. We need that vision now, updated for new challenges, grounded in domestic strength, committed to building institutions beyond any single administration. The alternative isn't some imagined past, but a future where disorder becomes normal and crises multiply beyond control.